Philippines' first ever Olympic gold medal winner, Heidelyn Diaz, says she is not retiring anytime soon. The city of San Juan records two Delta COVID-19 variant cases. We'll get details later on in the program from Mayor Francis Zamora. Meanwhile, Quezon City denies it has an active Delta variant patient. Mayor Joy Belmonte will talk to us about that as well as her plans to keep the highly transmissible strain out of her city. And critics slam President Duterte for focusing too much on his bloody war on drugs in his final State of the Nation address. Later on in the program, we'll speak to lawyer Shel Diokno for his assessment of human rights and justice under the Duterte administration. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Filipino weightlifting champion Heidelyn Diaz looking forward to winning more medals for the Philippines following her historic victory in the Tokyo Games. On Monday, Diaz became the first Filipino to win an Olympic gold after she topped the 55-kilogram category. She posted a new world record, lifting a combined weight of 224 kilograms, cementing her place in Philippine and Olympic history. Prior to the Games, a 30-year-old Diaz had been contemplating retirement, but she's now setting that aside.
Hindi ako magsa-stop kasi kaya ko pa. Nakita ko yung galing ko and alam ko may ibibigay pa ako para sa Pilipinas.
Diaz now has a collection of one Olympic gold and a silver, which she won in the 2016 Rio Games. The Zamboanga native hopes her victory will inspire all Filipinos amid these trying times.
Kahit na sa pandemic na kaya natin, na-survive ko, na-survive ng team, na-survive ng Pilipinas, Philippine team. Nagawa natin kahit sabihin na nasa pandemic nandito tayo and risky, pero naiuwi natin ang medalya. Walang imposible. Hindi pa rin ako makapaniwala na nanalo ako ng gold. Hanggang ngayon, pero ugaw ko na, it's, yun, hindi ako makapaniwala nandito. Pero sobrang thankful ako.
Philippine Vice President Lenny Robredo congratulating Heidelyn Diaz on social media. She thanked the weightlifter for making Filipinos proud. She also praised Diaz for her dedication and hard work in spite of the obstacles in her way. The palace also congratulating Diaz for bringing pride and glory to the Philippines. Praises continue to pour in for the country's first Olympic gold medalist, Heidelyn Diaz. The Philippine Air Force, where the Filipino athlete serves as a sergeant, joins the country in celebrating the historic win. The Olympic gold medalist also getting some love from her hometown, Zamboanga. The Philippine Sports Commission is also congratulating the Filipino sports icon.
Ito na po yung pinakaantay natin na after almost 100 years, ito na po yung gold. Kinausap na po tayo ng International Federation na maraming tutulong sa akin, marami tayong ma-attract, everything. Maraming gagawing tournament dyan dahil maraming may inspire. At pag-uusapan po namin kung pwede siyang mag-stay para naman makapagbigay pa ng inspirasyon sa mga iba pang magpa-final, so nagpo-qualify.
Here are the prizes that await Heidelyn Diaz when she comes home. She will receive a total of 35.5 million pesos in cash rewards. 10 million pesos will be coming from the government and 10 million each from businessmen Manny Pangilinan and Ramon Ang. One Pacman Party List representative, Mikey Romero, will be giving 3 million and 2.5 million pesos will come from her hometown, Zamboanga City. These are on top of a house and lot in Tagaytay City, plus a 14 million peso condominium unit in Eastwood City from Mega World tycoon Andrew Tan. A former coach and relative of Heidelyn Diaz reveals she almost quit the sport on account of depression. Catalino Diaz says prior to the 2016 Rio Games, Diaz struggled with not being able to win a medal at the Olympics. but she eventually overcame her insecurity to break the Philippines' medal drought.
Before pa nga ng ano, yung Rio Olympics, yung time na yun, siguro ikwento ko na lang din konti, no? Gusto na niya rin mag-quit kasi sa tagal-tagal na nag-join siya ng weightlifting and sa Olympics, wala siyang nakukuha. Or yung last na Olympics niya is napaka-bad ng, ano, ng performance niya noon. So sabi niya, kung etong Olympics, hindi pa ako magkakamedal, I will quit na. Nung time na yun, sobrang depressed niya.
Oo. And yun, eh, mahirap na banan yun.
Opo, yung depression niya is ano eh, kasi nagkaroon siya ng injury, tapos nawalan siya ng coach noon, tapos less yung support kasi alam naman natin sa sports na ano, hindi talaga ganun yung support.
Meanwhile, another Filipino weightlifter will be competing in Tuesday's Olympic schedule. 22-year-old Elrin Ando is seen as an heir apparent of Heidelin Diaz. She will compete in the 64-kilogram division. Ando won a silver medal in the 2019 Southeast Asian Games. She also won a bronze and two silver medals in the Asian Championships last April. The city of San Juan records its first two Delta variant cases. San Juan Mayor Francis Zamora says the local government only found out about these patients and that they tested positive for the Delta variant after they finished quarantine. Meanwhile, the Okta Research Group tells the national government to go early and go hard in preventing a surge in Delta variant cases. Joining us now, San Juan City Mayor Francis Zamora. Mayor Zamora, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us today.
Yes, good afternoon, Carmina. Thank you for having me again on AMC.
What can you tell us about these two cases of Delta variant now confirmed to be in the city of San Juan, Mayor?
Yes, Carmina, as you mentioned, we have two confirmed cases of the Delta variant here in San Juan. They contracted the virus around end of June. And in fact, they have already finished their quarantine middle of July. And the results of the genome sequencing just came out last night. And they informed us that indeed these are confirmed cases of the Delta variant. And this is really the challenge for us Metro Manila mayors because of the limited capacity of the Philippine Genome Center to conduct genome sequencing. In this particular case, we found out only that they are confirmed Delta variant cases after they have been quarantined. It's easy to find out if they are positive simply through a PCR swab test. However, to find out if they are indeed Delta variant, it takes a while. And not all positive cases are genome sequenced. Right now, they conduct random sampling only.
Where did they get the virus? Okay, we know that they are residents of San Juan. Did they contract the disease in San Juan or outside?
Okay, based on our contact tracing, the first patient is a 25-year-old female, and she works in a call center, not in San Juan, but within Metro Manila. And the second patient is a 9-year-old male whose father is a co-employee of patient number one. So we have already determined that the two cases, actually the case number one, the 25-year-old female, and the father of the 9-year-old male, they both work in a call center. So we have already endorsed this information to the DOH. In fact, it is now their duty to coordinate with the city government where this call center is to conduct further investigation. So we have already endorsed this to the DOH for their appropriate action.
So it's pretty clear, Mayor, that there is no travel history. These are not returning Filipinos and that they had contracted the virus through local transmission outside of the city, outside of San Juan, but within Metro Manila.
Yes, that is correct. Those are the information that we have now. No travel history. And both of these people are working in this call center within Metro Manila.
And they've recovered.
Given those criteria, this could be considered local transmission.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me ask you about the 25-year-old. Was she vaccinated? Would you have any info on that prior to contracting the virus?
Unfortunately, she chose not to be vaccinated. And, you know, honestly, this is very sad because if she had only gotten vaccinated, then she would have gotten protection for this. But unfortunately, it was her choice not to get vaccinated. And I really feel bad about this.
And for the 9-year-old child, what can you tell us about how the child was able, or the severity of the illness in that child? Because we rarely do get any info about children contracting the disease and how they're faring during and after a recovery.
The child most likely was, she most likely there's a cobra of first patient. Given that he's only 9 years old, his vaccination. So that we face the first patient.
Sorry, Mayor, but you're coming in choppy. I'm going to try to buy some time for you so that you can go to a better location probably or fix your...
Okay.
Your...
Yes, am I better
there
now?
You go. Yes. So you were talking about the 9-year-old patient who has now recovered, but tell us about the experience while he was in the middle of battling COVID, the Delta variant.
Okay, the 9-year-old, the way it looks... it was the father who infected the 9-year-old because the father is a co-worker of the first patient. And because he's only 9 years old, he's not yet qualified for vaccination. So he has completed his quarantine already. In fact, both of them have completed their quarantines already. And around a week after they completed the quarantine, that's the only time the genome sequencing results came out. So that is a big challenge that we're facing now. In fact, during a Metro Manila Council meeting the other day with the DOH, this similar complaint was raised by a couple of other mayors that because the genome sequencing results are very delayed, how do we react now if we find out after the fact? So this is a big challenge for us, and I hope that the DOH can really increase their capacity in terms of genome sequencing so that we can immediately find out. As mayors, we can act on it as long as we have information.
I mean, the data coming to you delayed is one thing, but also the sampling that's being done, Mayor, is that a concern as well for you and also your colleagues about the random sampling that's being taken, considering the high transmissibility rate of COVID, of this Delta variant, I should say. Go ahead.
The current protocols they're doing are basically, for instance, in San Juan, since we only have two confirmed cases, in fact, we just found out yesterday, we are not yet qualified for all positive cases to be genome sequenced. I believe that you have to reach a certain number of Delta variant cases for them to test all positive cases in your city. And that was explained to me just this morning by our city health officer, because I asked the same thing. Why are they just doing random sampling and not testing everyone? But it all boils down to the capacity of the Philippine Genome Center to conduct genome sequencing. So that's really a challenge for us now here in
Manila. Mayor, when you think about it, when you have a lot of cases of Delta already, wouldn't that be too late?
I agree. That's why we are really hoping that the Philippine Genome Center can increase its genome sequencing capacity so that we can act faster. Because how can we act on something that we do not know? Yes, we know they are positive patients, but are they Delta variant cases or not? We have no way of finding out except when the results come out.
All right. So final question for you, Mayor Zamora. So how is this going to change now the game plan of the Metro Manila mayors? In light of these two cases, and tell us about the cooperation that's now ongoing between and among the mayors to keep the numbers low and hopefully not let these numbers explode.
Carmita, one thing is for sure. The number of Delta variant cases in Metro Manila and in the country are very underreported. And this is because we find out late already. So it's possible that there are really a lot more Delta variant cases around the country that we do not know, which we will eventually find out in the next few days or in the next few weeks. So tomorrow we will be having a Metro Manila Council meeting again along with the IATF to discuss further COVID-19 responses and interventions vis-a-vis the entry of the local transmission of the Delta variant here in the Philippines. So we will really discuss extensively tomorrow. In fact, earlier I was with MMDA Chairman Ben Herabalos during an event here in Manila, and this was really asked of us also earlier by the media. So tomorrow we will be having a meeting for this.
All right. We're going to have to leave it at that. San Juan City Mayor Francis Zamora joining us this afternoon. Thanks again, Mayor. Keep safe and take care.
Thank you very much, Carmina.
Right, moving on, the number of active COVID-19 cases here in the Philippines now at an over three-week high of 54,401. That's after the health department reported more than 6,000 new infections Monday. 241 new fatalities were also recorded. That's the highest daily figure since April 9th. But the DOH notes that can be attributed to the backlog of cases or in cases following an error in the government's COVID-19 digital platform. Meanwhile, the highly contagious Delta variant was detected in more areas around the country. In just 4 days, authorities have identified 84 new cases of this variant. But health officials insist the rise in infections does not yet indicate a new COVID surge.
Ngayon atin pong inaalam, no, what really happened in these specific areas, if there were really breaches or meron pa ho tayong ibang factors na kailangan tignan. Pero ang pinaka-importante, since nakita natin itong mga ganitong klaseng detalye, tayo po ay mas nag-iigting ng ating mga border controls.
Oh my God. The Quezon City local government denies the city has an active Delta COVID-19 case. We'll speak now to Mayor Joy Belmonte about that, as well as her plans on preventing the Delta variant spread in Quezon City. Mayor Belmonte, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Carmina, and good afternoon to all of our televiewers.
That was quite a scare last night when, you know, text messages started circulating that there was already a breach in Quezon City and a case has been found, a Delta variant case has been found there. But you're now going to tell us that's not true. How were you able to contain it?
No, it's not actually true. I think that there was a mistake in the way that the media understood the press release that was issued by the city, you know, and, you know, it is my policy to always be transparent to the people of Quezon City. But I think when you hear the word Delta, there is already that misinterpretation that, oh, there is a case. Mm. And actually what happened, and very clearly, if you went through the, sorry, Carmina.
It's all right.
If you go through, the press release, it is very, very clear that this case we're talking about is a 34-year-old OFW from Saudi Arabia who arrived in the country on June 24. And obviously, before they arrived in the country, they're swabbed there. So he came here. He was quarantined for 10 days in a quarantine facility in another city. And then after that, transferred to another quarantine facility in another city. No, So he was only allowed to come back to Quezon City where he lives after he was tested negative. No, So and after he came back to Quezon City, and that was July 11, almost 16 days or about 16 days after he arrived home from the Middle East, he arrived in Quezon City, and then on July 25, and this is just to again reiterate the observations of Mayor Zamora in San Juan, on July 25, we found out that he had the Delta variant. Almost a month after he tested positive for COVID. No? Mm. So that is the situation now in our country. It takes weeks, sometimes close to a month, before we know whether a variant is a Delta variant.
Yeah, so tell us about what you are going to do as mayor of Quezon City to, you know, address this concern. We just spoke with Mayor Francis Zamora. You heard about his concerns. What about there in Quezon City? Because as he said, if the data that you get is delayed, that quickly erodes the reaction time of the chief executive. Go ahead, Mayor.
Yeah, that's why here in Quezon City, we're very proactive. No? So first, we already formed, through an executive order, a task force Delta variant. So this is an interagency task force consisting of various agencies in our local government that are all working together to become more vigilant and to intensify our COVID response. One of the presumptions that we make here in Quezon City is we presume that every case is now a possible Delta case. So that is something that we're doing. Now, and as a result of that, we have passed an ordinance that, number one, we are prohibiting all forms of home quarantining or home isolation for COVID-positive patients. So this is a very unpopular ordinance that we passed. No? But we felt it necessary because based on experience, when we allow home quarantining, because allegedly the positive patient has his own bedroom or her own bedroom, his or her own toilet, it really doesn't work. He ends up infecting his entire family because of the lack of discipline, no, and maybe because of loneliness, no. So because of this, we passed this ordinance. We are prohibiting you now, if you're a positive patient or even a patient with symptomatic, from staying home, and you have to transfer to our isolation facilities. But having said that, Carmina, we also invested a lot in upgrading our isolation facilities to make them more enticing to people to move into. So, for example, we have invested in Wi-Fi. We've invested in more health workers so that at least you know that you're going to be cared for when you're there. All medicines will be shouldered by the local government. You know, incentives like that are now in place. Sometimes I'm trying to set up Netflix in some of our isolation facilities, air conditioning, you know, and that is a way for us to say that, you know, you move out, you transfer, we take care of you. So it's to the best interest of the patient and his family. So that's one thing that we're doing. In addition to that, we've also passed another ordinance to make sure that our digital contact tracing app is really being used by all of our establishments. Now, we did this, Carmina, because if you recall, a couple of weeks ago, we had several bars that were closed down, or at least temporarily closed down, because they were operating to full capacity, where people were not practicing minimum health standards. We wanted to contact trace all of these patrons. And we found out that while they had a QC pass, these were just on display, but none of them had any names in the database. So we could not even contact trace anybody or test anybody. So we passed an ordinance now that we are penalizing all establishments that are not using their QC pass properly. And second, that all establishments must have the QC pass app by August 15 of this year.
Mayor, I do also want to follow up on another story reaching the newsroom, and that's that your local government will be testing all workers of a factory after one of the employees tested positive for COVID-19 and then later on was traced as a close contact of a Delta virus patient in another city. What's the latest on that?
So that's the situation there, Carmina, is again, we had a meeting, the Metro Manila mayors and the DOH announced, this was last weekend, and the numbers were much less at that time, that these were the Delta cases that were identified. And as mentioned already by Mayor Zamora, this is all because of random sampling. They don't test all samples. And so this particular lady that was tested in this particular LGU tested positive for Delta. Now, the mayor of that LGU called me up and said, Mayor Joy, you know, I just want you to know that that lady, she's pregnant and she's a stay-at-home mother and she has the Delta variant, but her husband works in Quezon City. So it might be good, it may make good sense for you to also find this husband and contact trace. Mm-hmm. So when we investigated this particular husband, we found out that he had symptoms early in July. But when he first felt symptoms, he already had himself admitted to a hospital. No, so he did not anymore return to his workplace. But even given that, what we did was we had our entire SESU test everybody in his workplace. So this testing is ongoing. It started on Saturday. And there are no reported cases in terms of symptoms yet, but we can never be too cautious. And at the moment, there are no results out yet. But as soon as these results are out and they are alarming, we will inform the media as we always do. Now, okay. So that's the situation there.
Final questions for you, Mayor Joy. So I guess there are two really key issues here, right? One is the delayed data that the mayors get, and also the random sampling that's being done. Obviously, as Mayor Zamora said, we don't have the capacity to ramp up the samplings or even the genome sequencing. It's not fully capacity. It doesn't have full capacity to, you know, get all these samples in. How do you propose now to go around that, given that that is the situation that's facing you right now amid the threat of the COVID Delta variant, Mayor?
You know, Carmina, here in Quezon City, I really always thrived on the principle that we try to be as self-reliant as we can. So in fact, I've asked the members of our task force, Delta, to try to find out if we can already purchase our own machines to do genome sampling or genome sequencing. Because if we can afford it and we can hire...
Mayor. Okay, we seem to have lost Mayor Joy Belmonte there. We're going to try and get her back on the line. But as she was saying, she's not the first mayor, though, who is entertaining the idea of buying their own genome sequencing machine. Mayor, she's back on Zoom. Go ahead, Mayor. So you were saying if you can afford it, you might as well just buy the genome sequencing machine. You're on mute, Mayor. Can you unmute? Kindly unmute. There you go.
Sorry, Carmina.
No worries.
Problems with Zoom are always there. But when we had that meeting with the DOH last weekend, they said that for them to procure more machines, it would take another 2 months. And I feel that that's too long. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why it takes that long, considering that we are in an emergency situation. But having said that, here in Quezon City, we will just try our best to be self-reliant if we can. And so we are at the moment canvassing for possible sources of these machines, because if we can, we will pass a supplemental budget and we will procure our own machine. And I think that's the best solution that I can think of at the moment.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. Quezon City Mayor Joy Belmonte joining us this afternoon. Thanks again, Mayor. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you, Carmina, and God bless you always.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Moving on, over 375,000 doses of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine arrive in the Philippines. More than 272,000 of these were shipped to Metro Manila and 51,000 to Cebu. Another 51,000 jabs will be sent to Davao, according to the health department. These doses will be allocated to regions that have not received Pfizer vaccines yet.
Mga walang mga ultra low freezer, pwede na natin bigyan ngayon. So first time nila mag-a-administer ng Pfizer.
Meanwhile, Israel sent medical experts to the Philippines again, this time to share best practices in vaccine operations. Last June, Israel sent 3 of its medical experts to the country to help government with its vaccine rollout. According to a study from South Korea, a mixed vaccination of Pfizer and AstraZeneca shots can boost antibody levels by 6 times. Details in this report.
A new medical study from South Korea says that a shot of the AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccine, followed by a shot of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, can boost some antibody levels by 6 times. Compared to using just 2 shots of AstraZeneca instead. The findings from Korea's Disease Control and Prevention Agency follow a similar study in the UK last month. The studies would support the decision by several countries to allow people who've had a single shot of AstraZeneca to use an alternative for their second dose after AstraZeneca was linked to rare blood clots. It includes Canada, Italy and China, although the World Health Organization has warned against the practice, saying there isn't enough data about the health impact. The South Korea study specifically focused on levels of what are called neutralizing antibodies, which prevent coronavirus from entering cells and replicating.
The United States not lifting its travel restrictions to several countries anytime soon amid the threat of the COVID-19 Delta variant. The United States also currently bars most non-U.S. citizens who, within the last 14 days, have been in the United Kingdom, Ireland, China, India, South Africa, Iran, and Brazil. The White House says these restrictions may remain in the coming months as officials cite the rising spread of the Delta variant across the globe. I'm going to take a break now. Up ahead, opposition lawmakers describe President Duterte's final State of the Nation address as the joke of the nation. Human rights advocate Shel Diokno will also be on the show for his take on the president's speech. You're watching Dateline Philippines. Dateline Philippines. We'll be right back here on ANC. Back. You're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The Philippines' first ever Olympic gold medal winner, Heidi Lindia, says she is not retiring anytime soon. The city of San Juan records two Delta COVID-19 variant cases. Mayor Francis Zamora says both completed their quarantine this month, but the results of the genome sequencing only came out on Monday. Meanwhile, Quezon City Mayor Joy Belmonte says they're now looking into conducting their own genome sequencing. She also denies her city has an active Delta variant case. And critics slam President Duterte for focusing too much on his bloody war on drugs in his final State of the Nation address. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte defends his controversial actions and highlights his accomplishments during his final State of the Nation address Monday. Pia Gutierrez has the full story.
At 2 hours and 45 minutes, President Duterte's sixth and final State of the Nation address was the longest sauna delivered by a Filipino president to date. In his speech, President Duterte highlighted the achievements of the last 5 years of his administration as he laid down his priorities for his remaining year in office. Duterte says, despite intense criticisms, he has forged ahead in implementing what he deems are changes that the country needed, which included his war against crime and illegal drugs. The president, however, appeared to taunt the International Criminal Court, which is poised to begin a possible inquiry into crimes against humanity allegations in his drug war, by telling officials to shoot dead a certain arms smuggler in the Philippines.
We would be happy. Anyway, you're already charged in the ICC together with me. So what is the problem of adding another one? Another idiot Filipino who has caused great damage to our country.
The president in his sauna also noted the government's anti-insurgency efforts that has led to the surrender of thousands of communist rebels. He lauded the National Task Force Against Local Communist Armed Conflict for supposedly addressing the root causes of the communist insurgency in the countryside. This amid controversy over the NTF-LCAC's red tagging of institutions and personalities.
through the NTF-ELCAC, we invested in farm-to-market roads, school buildings, water, and sanitation. Health stations and livelihood.
The president also touted several milestones of his infrastructure program as well as his anti-corruption campaign. President Duterte, however, tells his successor that to completely eradicate corrupt officials, one needs to overturn the government.
Corruption is endemic in government. You cannot stop corruption. Nobody can stop corruption unless you overturn government completely. If I were the next president, if you think I really need, there's really a need for you to change everybody in the system, then you declare martial law and fire everybody and allow the new generation to come in.
He also highlighted his administration's independent foreign policy, which he said centered on the promotion and protection of the core national interests of the Philippines. The president reiterated his earlier statement that no country can diminish the Philippines' arbitral win in 2016 on the maritime dispute in the West Philippine Sea, even as he admitted that there is no way to enforce such decision on China.
Ano pa ang gusto ninyo? What will I do with a document that is not bind China because they were never a part of that arbitration? There was really no arbitration at all because it was only the Philippine side was said. Well and good. But ito ngayon, that there is the arbitral ruling, you know, I do not want to insult these people pushing me for something more than what I can handle. At anong gusto nila makipagira? Do something. What to do something? Do you want war against China?
As the pandemic erased the earlier economic gains of the country under his administration, the president said that he has focused government resources for its pandemic response amid the threat of new and more infectious variants. He focused on the government's vaccination efforts as he thanked medical workers and other frontliners for their role during the pandemic. This, however, did not stop the president from joking about getting infected with the virus. Duterte also renewed his call for Congress to pass the administration's priority bills, such as the Disaster Resilience Act, the E-Government Act, and laws for the creation of a Department of OFWs, a Center for Disease Prevention and Control, and a Vaccine Institute. With barely a year left in his term, Duterte insists that his final sauna is not his swan song, saying that his government continues to push for landmark reforms that he has promised Filipinos until his last day in office. Pia Gutierrez, ABS-CBN News.
Vice President Lenny Robredo calls on government to focus on its pandemic response. In a public address a day after President Duterte's final sauna, Robredo highlights the urgency to address the COVID-19 situation in the country. Aside from ramped-up testing and contact tracing efforts, Robredo calls for the passage of Bayanihan 3 and proper implementation of the Universal Healthcare Act.
Kaya nga patuloy ang pagdidiin natin. Walang ibang dapat tutukan sa mga panahong ito kundi ang pandemya at ang kanyang mga epekto. All hands on deck. Laser-like focus ang kailangan. Ito dapat ang isalamin ng budget, ng agenda ng bawat meeting ng pamahalaan, ng bawat memo na ibababa sa buong birokrasya. Kung magkakabit ng billboard at tarp, sana tungkol sa kung paanong makakaiwas sa sakit. Kung may ipapagawa sa isang batalyong graphic artist, sana ang layunin para dumami pa ang magpapabakuna. Kung magpapasa ng mga bagong batas, unahin sana ang pondo at pagpapatibay ng mga sistema laban sa pandemya.
Robredo also reminding the government, now is not the time for division.
kapag patuloy na lumalabas sa mga kababayan natin kahit pa ECQ? Hindi ba mas tamang itanong din natin kung bakit sila nagpipilit lumabas? Baka naman hindi lang sila basta pasaway. Baka magugutom sila kung hindi sila magtrabaho. O baka masiksikan pa sa loob ng mga tahanan nila. Kapag dumaing ang mga doktor at nurse, hindi ba dapat ang unang tugon natin paano kami makakatulong? Paano namin iibsan ang dalahin ninyo? Kapag may ayaw magpabakuna, hindi ba mas tama na bigyan sila ng insentibo kesa bantaan ng parusa? Kapag may mungkahe, hindi ba dapat makinig muna kesa agaran itong isang tabi bilang pagbatikos at pagkontra? Ang napapansin natin, sa tuwing may problema, para bang ang unang impulse ng iba, hanapin kung sino ang sisisihin, sino ang huhulihin, kaninong kritiko susunod na itututok ang mga troll.
Prior to the president's final sauna, various groups demanded that President Duterte be held accountable for deaths under his bloody drug war, state-sponsored killings, and democratic backsliding. Let's get an assessment of human rights in the Philippines 5 years into the Duterte administration with Attorney Shel Diokno, chairman of the Free Legal Assistance Group. Attorney Shel, welcome to the program, and nice to have you with us today.
Hi, Carmina. Hello to everyone watching.
All right. So first of all, I want to ask you, what impression did the president's final State of the Nation address leave you?
Well, it was same as far as I'm concerned. I wasn't really surprised with what he said. But what I found a bit surprising were things that he didn't mention at all in the sauna.
Like,
for example, there was no mention of our justice system and how to strengthen it. There was no mention of the issues revolving around education. I don't recall as well any mention about the environment, particularly the issues that we really face now in terms of climate change and renewable energy. These are things that I was hoping he would mention in his State of the Nation address.
But he did mention one thing that touched on free legal assistance, and that's free legal assistance for PNP and AFP officers who will find themselves facing charges resulting from the discharge of their duties. Attorney Shel, what kind of impact do you think will this have on the situation in the country, considering the culture of impunity that is prevalent now?
Well, first, let's put that situation in its context, because all members of the government actually have a lawyer, and that lawyer is the Office of the Solicitor General. When cases are filed against a government official for their actions, it's the Solicitor General that defends them generally. But when a government employee or official is charged with, for example, committing corruption or killing, these are not considered as part of their official duties. Mm-hmm. And therefore, in that situation, anyone in government must get their own private lawyer. So to me, well, the right to a lawyer is really a very basic right in the Constitution that everyone is entitled to. The question is, should we use public funds to give a lawyer to a government official or employee who is charged, for example, with committing a crime, especially if it's a serious crime? Because generally, no charges can be brought except if there is evidence, sufficient evidence to file a case. It's a bit concerning, but at the same time, we have yet to see what specific proposals will come out of that statement.
Do you think also that this will embolden these state forces to, you know, commit these crimes under the guise of protecting the country? Because, you know, the president's got their back. There's always going to be someone who will defend them, whatever it is that they do, because the president said and promised free legal assistance for them.
Well, this isn't the first time that the president has issued statements that, as you say, indicate that he's got their back. That brings to the fore really the need for accountability in our country, whatever offenses are committed, but particularly for really serious or grave offenses. And while there was a mention in the SONA about punishing people who commit offenses, I think I saw a lack of emphasis on the need to punish them by putting them in jail. Because if I remember, the president repeatedly mentioned, pag merong corruption, tinanggal ko o tatanggalin ko sa serbisyo. But for me, removing someone from office is not enough. In the first place, they may get back into office. They may be reappointed, especially to another position. And in the second place, it's really not a form of punishment because service in government shouldn't be looked at as a gift. Service in government is something we do for the people.
You mentioned a while ago that you were expecting the president to mention the current state of the justice system here in the Philippines. You didn't get that. We didn't hear anything of that sort. So let me ask you, Attorney Shell, what to you is the current state of justice here in the Philippines?
We have a very weak justice system. We have a justice system that is super delayed, where cases can take as long as 10, 15, or even 20 years. We have a justice system that's plagued by vacancies. About 20% of our judges' positions are vacant, and more than 30% of our prosecutors' positions are vacant. And that is one of the main reasons why cases take so long in our country. We also have a Berlin Wall between the police and the prosecution service. What do I mean by that? For our Philippine National Police, it's enough that they have arrested someone or identified a suspect and charged him or her in court. They don't care about conviction. So that when a case is given to the prosecutor, generally it's enough to file a case, but not enough to convict. Mm. And that accounts for the reason why we don't have a very high conviction rate in the country. The other issue is we don't have a central database that will ensure that a person who is put in, who is convicted, actually serves their sentence. So that it has happened and it can happen that someone who is convicted appeals, their conviction is affirmed, doesn't go to jail. And that's why I'm saying that we have such a weak justice system. To me, if we want to stop crime and corruption, there's only one way. We have to increase the certainty of punishment. It's really not the severity of punishment, but when criminals know that what they're doing will result in their arrest and prosecution and imprisonment, that's the only thing that will stop them from doing what they're doing.
Do you find that ironic, considering that he won this presidency because he presented himself as the hero, a strong man that will bring all that, you know, the 16 million who voted for him felt that we're lacking in this country. And yet 5 years down the line, justice continues to be distant from majority of Filipinos. Attorney Shell.
I think he was able to draw on that longing for justice that all Filipinos share. But unfortunately, I don't see any concrete measures that he has done to really deliver on that promise. And every single SONA, I cannot recall any SONA that he delivered that discussed the justice system and the need to strengthen it. If we're serious about stopping corruption, if we're serious about stopping organized crime, there's no other lasting solution except to strengthen the justice system.
The president did, though, mention the free tertiary education. He kind of touched on that yesterday as well. But why is this not enough? Why do you think the president should have said much more about the current state of the educational system here in the Philippines, especially as we are right here battling this pandemic, Attorney Shell?
That is one of the things I was waiting for, but didn't hear. Because the biggest issue that our youth have today is really the issue of education. If you recall, one of the hashtags that went viral was no student left behind. And that's a reflection of the fact that a lot of students were feeling that they couldn't continue learning in the environment that was produced by the pandemic. And in terms of the program that was delivered by the government. When we speak of online learning, we all know that not every student, in fact, many students don't have access either to electronic devices or to the internet. Mm. And that would immediately put them far behind. And the effect is not only on our students and the youth. The effect is really on the country itself. Because when we have the next generation of Filipinos not getting the education that they need to be able to work productively and to be able to help our country, that's going to affect us all.
Well, finally, Attorney Shaw, I want to talk about one thing that hasn't been talked about. Of course, it's a tall order to even expect that the president would touch on this in yesterday's last State of the Nation address, and that's the ballooning outstanding debt of the country. The total outstanding debt now, if I'm not mistaken, it breached 11 trillion just earlier this year, May, I think. And when you talk about climate justice and social justice, how do you think this ballooning outstanding debt would affect the attainment of climate justice, social justice, way past this administration? Because you and I were talking about this earlier. We know what the state of the nation is right now. But after he steps down from office, what to you will be the state of the nation that all of us would have to face? And with this outstanding debt looming before us, how will that affect all of our lives, Attorney Shaw?
This will definitely have a lasting impact, not only on our generation and the younger generations, but on generations to come. And it's really a big concern. Just like human rights, we don't expect the president to mention these topics, but they are on the table and they should be addressed, not only by this government, but the next government's going to inherit that. And I hope that that becomes an issue as well in 2022. Because when we speak of accountability and transparency, it's not only when it comes to EJKs and these other matters, but also in terms of the management of public funds. Malaking bagay yan at dapat talaga bigyan pansin ng ating prioridad, actually, ng ating pamahalaan.
So pagdating halimbawa sa basic services, to make sure that everyone has access to these services, no matter your stature in life, how do you think that's going to fare considering the outstanding debt that the Philippines now has because of this pandemic?
Yes, exactly. And especially when we speak of health services, which are probably the most important thing in most of our minds right now, this is going to have an adverse effect. And when in my own conversations with progressive economists, they've told me that dapat naman siguro pag-usapan to, this has to be part of the national conversation and part of the national agenda.
We have time to talk about that, but in our succeeding newscast, perhaps in the coming days, in the coming months, of course, in the run-up to the 2022 elections. Human rights defender, Attorney Shaw Diokno, we always appreciate you coming to the show. Thanks for joining us today. Keep safe and take care. Maraming salamat po. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Pranina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcast. Way back this newscast to on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep to your ANC.